Welcome to the Health Ranger Report on Brighteon.tv. I'm Mike Adams, and today our guest is Dr. Tao Braun, who is one of the smartest individuals that I've ever interviewed here. He's got a huge depth of knowledge about a variety of subjects, including psychology and chemistry. And he knows about the vaccines. He knows about the depopulation agenda. He knows about what's going on with the brainwashing, the programming of the people with false government narratives. And so today I'm going to get to ask him about all those subjects and much more, including maybe some more exotic questions about, hey, is there an agenda to actually exterminate humanity or kind of ethnically cleanse planet Earth on a cosmic scale? I don't know. Let's see what he has to say about that. And I'm sure he won't be afraid to answer it because he's a big thinking guy. You know, he gets the big picture. So that's going to be a fascinating interview straight ahead right here on Brighteon.tv. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Tao Braun.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
I got to get one of these.
Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. My guest today is Tao Braun. He's a returning guest and he is a science-minded individual and I think curious about the universe and has an extraordinary amount of knowledge about what's going on. In fact, Tao, welcome to the show, by the way, or Dr. Braun, maybe I should introduce you that way.
Tao is great, and I was hoping, I don't know if it was me, or maybe it was wishful thinking or someone else that you recently referred to as a high IQ individual. I would like to be referred to as a high IQ individual.
Yeah, I would put you in the category of a high IQ individual.
It was great. I once did a presentation for Mensa, and it was really interesting because being, you know, sort of getting an opportunity to present to people whose IQs have been registered and they're in the genius level. And then when you get an opportunity to impress those people, then I think it's fairly certain that you can feel like you're at least in a high IQ category. I know, I know that an interesting part about a lot of people, and I would put you into this category too. We really are needed at the moment. And it's not about necessarily intelligence as it's measured by standardized testing. The world is desperately needed for thinkers that are able to see the gestalt, the whole, you know, the whole picture.
100%.
That's what we're doing here. That's what we're doing. We're connecting dots.
In fact, people who have assessed my style of thinking and you know, cognitive patterns have described it as whole brain thinking. Holistic thinking, right brain, left brain. I mean, and we are necessary, like you said, to see the big picture and connect the dots. Because in society today, it's very easy to get stuck in one little corner of data or just look at economics only, or just look at culture only, or just look at, you know, tech or finance or whatever. Big picture time is where it all becomes clear. And big picture, in my view, and you know, I'll ask for your comments on this, but big picture is we are living through a deliberate planned extermination of the human race. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I absolutely agree. I don't think that the intention is to eliminate everybody. I think that the intention is to eliminate most people.
Agreed. Yes.
And basically create Earth as a form of almost like, you know, back in the day when Club Med was the thing, right? I don't know what even it is there today, you know, whether it's Ibiza or anything else. So clearly I'm not on the party circuit or even have time or the resources for vacations during a genocide. But whatever it is right now, sort of the Club Med version of the world where less than 1%, much less than 1% of the world would be the goal of these folks, to basically then enjoy the planet on their terms, without what they believe in terms of the rest of us just being, you know, a waste and a noise for them. And it really is just the same way they have exclusive clubs with everything else. They want an exclusive club called Earth. Elon Musk, though, I think has understood that there's a short lifespan on those kind of clubs, which is why I think he's infatuated with leaving the planet as a backup plan, or is at least, you know, a feeling that, hey, this won't work out pretty well because you're going to kill off all the animals and make this place unlivable. And then that's why I think he's pretty obsessed with space, because it's like, you know what, if this room isn't working out, where do I move to? What's the next room? What's the next door opener?
Well, but it's, you know, space is harsh, man. Vacuum. you know, all the water sublimates into vapor crystals. You want to talk about a tough time. I don't know why these people think, I want to go to Mars and grow food on Mars. Really? You probably can't even grow food in your backyard.
I love the topics you bring up, because I've actually tried to be a farmer. And I am a horrible farmer. I did a pretty cool thing in that when I was working on my doctorate, I realized that if I had to spend the next, you know, 3 or 4 years of my life in a library somewhere, it was going to be hell. So what I decided to do is I bought a Russian made bike called the Ural with a sidecar, and I left on that, and I saw 32 states of this beautiful nation, and I worked on small farms. I did organic farming and small farming all over the country. I got to see big cities, small cities. I drove through the Rust Belt all the way through. I went west, as the classics say, go west, young man. And I went west, and then I came back, and everything in between. And I got to say that what I love about being on small farms is there is a role for everybody. So like for me, I don't have the patience to sit and watch spinach come out of the ground slowly, slowly, slowly. But I'm the guy that if you need stuff demolished, if there's manual labor, I love it. Someone gave me a chainsaw and said, go to work on the property. You know, I'm that kind of guy. I'm also a fix it kind of guy. But everybody, as you know, when you build a system like that, and when it's small enough where you don't need massive sort of integrated systems that become inhumane, there's a role for everybody. Everybody gets to enjoy what they're good at.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But you bring up a lot of things there, and it kind of reminds me of the big question I wanted to ask you before we got a little bit distracted. But I want to get your big picture sit rep, basically. So where are we in history right now? What's actually happening around us? And, you know, let's try to clear out some of the propaganda cobwebs of the mainstream media and just say, like, what's real now? What would your take be on that?
Well, I'm going to start by saying what I sort of notice in terms of I've been thinking a lot, even as my work relates to mass killings. You know, a lot of that happens because of existential crisis, lack of meaning in people's lives. I compare it to an existential starvation. I've looked at the physiology that actually drives mass killers, and it is a starvation. It's the same cycle. There's a dopamine cycle. There's a fixation. It's like a hunter that's out there, that's starving to death, that just can't get the animal. They can't get the sights on the animal, or they keep scaring away their food, and so they go into this cycle, and it literally feels like a starvation for them. So I think the starvation that's going to hit us from a meaning point of view is we are now frantically trying to search, just like other previous centuries, what is the truth. Because in the world of AI, in the world of fake media, in the world of mainstream media that is propaganda, for big corporations, I think the big struggle that most people are having now is trying to get a sense of reality and trying to know who and what to trust. And ultimately, that in itself can create the worst forms of anxiety, because you need to wake up and you need to feel certainty about something each day. So those that don't have, let's say, a good faith that they can rely on, or something that they're doing that gives them meaning, there's no anchor point.
So are you thinking then, Tao, that the fact that the media is lying to people all the time, and the fact that the institutions are lying, is actually causing kind of a shockwave of a lack of faith in the institutions, which is causing people to lose their anchor to reality, and that's leading in a way into this crisis that sometimes leads to mass killings? I mean, am I wrong to link all those things together?
You're absolutely right. And here's the vulnerability with it. They're not just lying. What they're doing, and people grasp for terms. Gaslighting is very interesting because you cannot be gaslit if you're aware that you're being gaslit. Right. So during this pandemic, people kept referring to, let's say, the unvaccinated group as being gaslit. And they're trying to that's actually not the gaslit crowd. The gaslit crowd doesn't know that they're being lied to.
Right.
And then what happens to them, because it hasn't really even happened in a big way yet, they keep changing the story. Right. And so it's the search for a truth. And then as the person feels like they have some sense of understanding or certainty, they switch out for new facts or for a new story. And over time, that corrodes people's sense of certainty. And there are only certain things, like I mentioned, in terms of faith, there's certain principles and ways of living and connections with human beings. If you don't have that, eventually what the exploit is, if you make somebody like that, then you can come in and you can exploit them. This is a form of what terrorist groups do when they recruit someone, and they take people that are searching for a tribe, searching for meaning, and they mess with them. I mean, these are also very involved in the Harvard experiments of MK Ultra. They did this, for example, I think the most famous case of this was done to the Unabomber, where the experiment that was done on the Unabomber was to debate with a highly intelligent person and keep switching the rules so that you can't win the debate. You're basically trying to negotiate with a psychopath. It's so frustrating.
Sounds like trying to reach Facebook's customer service department, actually.
Absolutely, or any human being on the back of something. I recently had I've got two products out that I brought to market at this time, and so this is the first time I'm seeing how vulnerable we are, for example, to a digital currency, to cryptocurrencies, and to a centralized exchange, because I just got a deactivation notice from our payment processor because it's in the supplement category, and they're like, yep, all right, well, you got 30 days and then go find someone else. And so I was scrambling to get that done. But this time round, I didn't even try and reach their customer service because I know I'm just going to get a bot. I know that I'm not actually going to get some sort of manager or some person that I can talk to. And so what it also does, this frustration, this unwinnable Hegelian dialect, what it does is it gets you to give up. It's a form of, right, of learned helplessness, right? You're like, all right, I'm just going to move on. I'm not going to fight the system.
Well, that's very wise on your part, I think, because the system has become insane. But I want to get back to something you said just a couple minutes ago, which sort of reminded me that society seems to be run on narratives, and people live out the narratives, the stories that they tell themselves and that they tell each other. And when those narratives seem true, in other words, when those narratives reflect the sensory reality that people experience from a first person point of view, then I would call that, stability or sanity. But when the narratives diverge from the experience, when you have a narrative like transgenderism, for example, that's a very powerful narrative being pushed, but it has nothing in common with the observable experiential reality that people actually see and live through. When those things diverge, then you have insanity. At least this is what I'm proposing in this definition. But isn't it true that the narratives that we have lived on in society, because all of us choose narratives at some point, or we embrace them, but so many of the more popular narratives are unraveling in a way that they have never unraveled before, such as banks failing or not learning that you can't trust the FDA, things like that?
Okay, so and I agree with you completely that this is a purposeful unraveling of all narratives. It's purposefully to get somebody to the point of chaos while big change is being made. But if you think about it, what is going on and what's gone on, not even just the pandemic, even before it, if you think about what was happening with violence across our nation, and riots that were left to go out of control, complete cities burnt down, defund the police at the same time while crime is going up and people need, safety in their communities, all of this stuff that was going on, all of the wokeness, that has been going on for a lot longer than the pandemic, is it starts corroding the sense of certainty. But here's the most, probably the most out there comment that I can make, that at some point I hope to have the solid science that backs this up completely. But I believe that this bioweapon that we've been discussing, and I know I've been on the show and you've had some amazing guests to unpack this bioweapon, I've become more and more certain in my own mind that the fundamental reason for the vaccine was as a tranquilizer.
Really?
Right. So we've talked about all kinds of mechanisms. We've talked about the death toll that it can bring, the depop. It's all there, and all of that is completely valid. But there is a short-term goal of what this thing does. And what it does as a measurable output of this vaccine is it downregulates monoamine neurotransmitters. You're talking about norepinephrine, serotonin, and dopamine. So what happens if you downregulate norepinephrine, serotonin, and dopamine, and you'll eventually crash somebody into depression? But the stage before that would be what you're trying to do with somebody on a ward with Haldol. You're literally making somebody awake.
Zombified.
Exactly, a zombie. And you can, I mean, I think you and I could probably say that we can see that happening to the world around us.
So wait a second. When we ask questions, you and I, like, why aren't other people outraged at what's going on with their children being mutilated, for example, part of the answer that you're proposing here is that, well, those people have been tranquilized in effect by this injection that's altering their brain chemistry to kind of chill them out while the craziest things happen all around them that would otherwise generate a lot more reaction.
Right. And there's an intuitive process to this, because when you downregulate those neurotransmitters, but you also have the impact, and I know you've had great guests like Dr. Cottrell talking about different pathologies that the spike protein brings in. One of the things that everyone's aware of is this thing is a very high risk of clotting. And so what causes an increase of clotting in the body as a chemical? It's adrenaline. It's the sympathetic nervous system. And so there's your kill switch in terms of you're convincing the body to become a zombie. Then if the person feels like they should fight back, if you want to muscle through this fight, you actually run the risk of having an aneurysm. This this spike protein, if I didn't hate it as much as I do, and if I didn't think it was as sinister, I mean, it's a very, very impressive compound. This is like a compound that has taken, this isn't decades of work. This is hundreds of years of work that all cults come together with somebody really understanding how to make poison and how to combine certain poisons. So like a karate dart that brings down an animal. Well, if you could bring down the animal and also calm the animal down so that the meat doesn't get spoiled, and if you convince that animal to go passively so that you don't have to chase it around after you've shot it with an arrow, you know, that's how venom works. And so if you look at what they've done over here is they've combined different toxins in a way that's a package deal that ultimately there's so many facets to it, but part of it is the effect of it that it has on human behavior. When I trace back some of this, you know, for the audience that doesn't know me, my stepping stone into this realm, into this sort of pandemic, was that people were asking me my professional opinion of whether this was a bioweapon. And as much as I'd studied things like anthrax and Ebola and smallpox and the way that, you know, sort of natural biologicals could be weaponized, I had a good foundational knowledge of things like sarin and tarban, but not enough where I could, like, I could now get on a stage and talking about these chemicals. But there is so much research that came out of places like Fort Detrick, where they were just basically playing around with soldiers for decades, doing drug therapies on them with these type of venoms and poisons to nudge behavior. I mean,
hold on. I mean, this is really bombshell. So you're talking about neurological, biochemical, or neurochemical changes that translate into behavioral changes. And let me have a follow up question for you. But let me give out your website, drtaubraun.com. That's drtaubraun.com. This is the website. Hypothesis says here about COVID and envenomation. I just want to give people your site, and biochem engineering, yes, some excellent stuff. We can talk about that in a little bit. But Tao, what I want to ask you then is, if what you're saying is true, then you know it's the perfect plan. So they engineer this poison. I mean, first they engineer SARS-CoV-2 to create the panic for people to line up to get the poison, which is the tranquilizer. They chill out, you know, 80% of the population, and then they collapse the money supply. They mutilate your children. They, you know, destroy your culture. They tear down the statues, like any crazy thing they want to do. And you're just going to, I mean, the vast majority of the population just stand there with like a drool piece coming out of the side of their mouth, you know, like a heavily medicated patient in a mental center. Like that's essentially what you're talking about.
You know, what's interesting, it should create the drool, but because they built it the way you gave me the perfect way to talk about this molecule, it's actually a drying up agent. So it actually should be create copious amounts of mucus and other bodily secretions. And when it works and when it fits the body nicely, it actually will dry up the body. It actually takes the water in the body and it creates almost a heavy form of deuterium. The chemistry of this, I mean, I know people have looked at, let's say, the cationic properties with the lipid nanoparticles in the vaccine. Even without the lipid nanoparticles, this thing for its size is so positively charged that it's like a giant magnet. And so you can think about all the profound changes on a nanoparticle level that would bring a body that is so sensitive to physiological changes. I mean, this thing, you can imagine now, of course it could switch off taste and smell and depolarize ion-gated channels. Of course it could disseminate the bacteria in a body and just leave gram-negative antibacterial resistant bacteria. I mean, that's what it does. That's something, you and I haven't had time to go and do it, but we were so ahead when we first had our first interview together, where I laid out things like part of this, I compared it to a sped up, like a form of progeria, a non-congenital form of rapid aging. That's what the spike protein can do. We talked about the amyloidic stuff even before you got a chance to look at some of the the samples that you looked at. You and I unpacked a lot of this, sort of the way we're doing it now. And one of the things is that this thing does is that because of what it is and because it's an alkaloid and because it's so positively charged, you're really just talking about fragments of metal. You know, the more I understand this thing, the more I understand that the real power in this thing is it is the size, this the fact that it is so minute and the fact that it is so positively charged. And the fact that it's a coil, it becomes a nanoparticle solenoid. And when you run a current through it, it becomes a magnet. So when this thing hits things where a current, when electricity will go through it, it can draw particles to itself, which is why it can do clots, which is why it will cause cells to change, stem cells to change. It's why it can get into, let's talk a little bit about...
go ahead. 5G then, because, right, we're talking about electric potential then penetrating the skin, even going through the blood. You know, 5G signals can go, I don't know, 5 or 6 inches deep into the body. And you know, longer wavelengths can penetrate, obviously, even more than that. But we're talking about electric potential then coursing through the blood while you have what you're describing as essentially a solenoid type of structure. What if it's, I mean, you may have just nailed it. What if it's the combination of the spike protein plus 5G that causes the clotting?
There we go. And I think that the 5G that we've experienced now, I think that the reason for 5G and the reason that it's staggered the way it is and that it's short-term frequency is it becomes a form of you have to wait for a riot and then you have to bring in a mobile unit, whether they're using sound or heat. They've now built substations in cities where if they're populous, if there was an uprising, they just switch it on. They just take it. They literally, I mean, the frequencies that have got it now, they know are safe enough for us to survive. But they know that they can turn those frequencies on and just fry us. It would be the equivalent of putting somebody in a microwave. I mean, those are now population control substations that are built into cities all over the place. They're military grade frequency transmitters.
So feel free to repost this on other channels and platforms. I'm Mike Adams here, Brighteon.com. Thanks for tuning in. Take care.